might have heard that the Metallica boys were gonna play some heavy shit tonight.
Welcome to Metal Up Your Podcast. I'm Ethan Luck, and this is another edition of Metal Tales from the Road. And we're finally talking to people over there in Europa, going to all these European shows. We're all extremely jealous of the set list and what's happening over there. But anyways, enough of that. On the phone via Skype, all the way in London, England, is Tom Dean.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm well, man. How are you doing these days?
Very good, very good. Kind of getting at the start of what's going to be an awesome summer of just just Metallica shows and going to lots of cool places.
Yeah, man. So, let me get this out of the way first. Are you a black ticket holder?
I am. Yeah, yeah. I bit the bullet as soon as that offer came up.
Yeah.
Checked with the wife, got the permission, and just went for it.
I mean, it's a smart move, especially if you can get to enough shows to kind of pay for it. Then it's great, you know, and if you can get off work, you know, whether you're taking a train to a show or a flight or whatever, if I was able to do it and I wasn't on the road touring and doing all that stuff, then I would have probably done what I could to get a black ticket for the US shows.
Exactly. Once you saw kind of how much the black ticket was compared to just a general ticket for a one-off show, I think I only had to be able to get to about four before it made kind of financial sense.
Yeah.
And it was just kind of a great incentive to try and get to as many. So I think I'm going to get to do nine.
Oh, man. Nine shows in Europe. That's so cool, dude. I'm so jealous. Well, and we'll get into like the set list and stuff, because I mean, a lot of people over here are, you know, some people are upset, I guess, but like a lot of people over here are just kind of like, man, like Europe always gets the good set list.
I think we do. I've kind of got used to it. I've just been getting so many more shows as well. If I think kind of the time that I've been into the band, then how many opportunities we've had to see them just in the UK. So I've been to see them in the States once, went to Charlotte in October, and then this last weekend, that was the first time I'd seen them in Europe outside of the UK. But yeah, just kind of being in London within like 20 miles of my house, they've played like probably like 10 times.
Amazing. So you only went to one US show?
Yeah. So I went to the Charlotte show in October. My best mate lives over there, so it was a good excuse to get over, see him, and then and go to the show. And it kind of linked up with my school teacher, so it was in the school holidays, so I could get over there. I'd seen three shows in the UK of the arena tour, so I kind of knew what I was in for, and I knew my buddy would really like it. He's a big music fan as well.
Oh, that's
so
awesome.
Yeah, it was really cool to kind of experience a slightly different vibe of the US shows, a little bit more laid back. Got to see Jim Brewer.
Yeah.
An experience.
We are definitely more laid back over here. That's the thing. You know, we've talked about it on the show a little bit, but and I've done a ton of touring in Europe and the UK over the years, and the crowds are just different over there, man. They're I don't know what it is. They're definitely way more energetic, more involved. This isn't a knock on our crowds here. It's just a different vibe over there. I mean, maybe that's why they're getting the good set list.
Maybe. But I really noticed it. Like we got to the arena to the Charlotte show, like reasonably early, probably about 20 minutes before Jim Brewer came on, and we could walk, and we stood like one row behind the barrier.
Yeah.
Whereas like, if that was a show in London, you'd have had to have been queuing from about midday or earlier to have any hope of being that close by.
Yeah, man, for sure. I don't know. Anybody listening that lives overseas from the U.S. knows what I'm talking about. It's just a different kind of thing over there, man. They just... You know, a lot of European and UK fans of music, they like all sorts of music. So if you're at a festival, you know, whether it be Reading or Leeds or, you know, Pink Pop or whatever, there's people there, they'll see Metallica and then they'll see the, you know, Coldplays and bands like that. You know, they're not, it seems like in the US, a lot of times people really go, like big crowds go to see like one band, and then, you know, a different group of people are going to see another band on another stage, where over there, it's like this big collective, I think.
Yeah, I think people are used to kind of just getting exposed to loads of different things, and there's not that kind of tribalism. It's cool just to be into anything.
Yeah, exactly. Have you ever gone to any shows at Rock Werchter?
I haven't. I've never been to a festival outside of the UK. So I've been to Reading. Reading was actually the first Metallica show I've went to.
Oh, okay.
It was a Reading festival. And then I've done Download at Donington Park,
right,
what used to be Monsters of Rock, and then Sonosphere as well.
Ah, very cool.
And
well,
I never went outside of the UK.
If you ever get the opportunity, or the lineup is so good that you have to go to Belgium, that's one of the best festivals I've ever been to.
I've met a couple of people at kind of Metallica shows who have said that, and like the Rock Am Ring one as well in Germany. It's meant to be pretty awesome as well.
Yeah, Rock Am Ring and Rock Am Park are great. Yeah, there's so many good festivals over there. And I mean, the U.S. is stepping it up. There's a lot of festivals that have, you know, come to be over here in the last 10 years, you know, outside of like the big ones like Coachella, Bonnaroo, stuff like that. Obviously, Lollapalooza is now a worldwide festival. But yeah, we've gotten some great festivals happening over here now, too.
You got a cool one in Nashville coming up, haven't you? I think I saw it on some of the Metallica forums, and Megadeth and a few other.
Yeah, there's
bands
it's this new one.
Like September time, is it?
It's called it's like a number. I want to say it's probably like the exit number or something where that is. But it's basically down near where they do Bonnaroo and stuff. But it's like an all metal festival happening in October.
Yeah, no, I saw a poster for the lineup, and that looked pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it looks really cool. I think Megadeth's on it. Guns N' Roses is headlining one day.
That's what drew me to it.
I hadn't even heard of it, and then right before I left for this tour, I was just running some errands, you know, last minute stuff before I left, and all of a sudden I saw a billboard for it, and I was like, what is that? Never heard of it. So it's the inaugural year, I guess.
No, hopefully it takes off and becomes a regular thing.
Yeah, I hope so, man. So you've been on a Metal Tales before with Clint, and so you've kind of gone into your Metallica story, but maybe we can kind of touch on it again for those that are new listeners or those that maybe have listened to so many episodes since then and kind of forgot. Just give us a quick kind of rundown of how you got into the band.
So it was my cousin one New Year back. I was about 13, so I'm 35 now.
Okay.
So this would have been kind of mid to late 90s, and he was kind of a couple of years older than me, and he played me Master of Puppets. And I distinctly remember like the intros to Sanitarium, Battery, and just it was just like nothing. I'd my early forays into music were a bit more kind of the indie scene,
yeah,
so like Blur and Oasis and bands like that, and I just never heard anything as heavy or as cool as that Metallica album. And then so he made me a cassette of that and a cassette of the Black Album, and from then on it was just kind of 90% of everything I listened to was just Metallica. Nice to head down to the news agents every Tuesday and buy Kerrang magazine and kind of scour for everything, any mention of Metallica.
Yeah, man.
And then I think kind of the first kind of, and I can't remember which order, I'll get shut down now for not remembering the order. I think like the first like new releases that came out when I was kind of aware was like Garage Inc. and then S&M. So I was probably on the right just after Reload, because I remember buying Reload, but it'd already been out for a little while.
Yeah, that's cool. And that's that was a good time to come online, man, because you know, some people, it was in the mid-90s, and maybe they got into the, you know, Puppets and Lightning stuff before that, so maybe Load and Reload were a bit of a shocker. But Garage Inc. and S&M, I mean, that's such a great era of Metallica.
Yeah, it just means I was coming on late enough that I could just kind of absorb everything. And it always bugs me that I can never remember, like, the exact album order that I got. So it must have been, like, Puppets and Black Album first.
Okay.
But then I think I'd bought whatever was on sale in my local CD shop,
right, yeah.
Any one time. So I got them in a really random order, like from like Ride and then Justice and then Kill 'Em All and then Load and then Reload. So yeah, I've got no idea what order, but I just loved it all.
Yeah,
and
man.
Kind of got all the VHSs, like the Year and a Half in a Life and Cliff 'Em All and Cunning Stunts. And so then it was just like a constant diet. If I wasn't listening to it when I was out, then they were on in the background.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. I mean, you know, they're one of those bands that they've put out so many cool releases outside of normal studio albums and, you know, DVDs, VHSs, all that stuff, box sets. There's so much cool stuff to collect with Metallica. I mean, even just yesterday, and these weren't official releases, but I was at a record store down the street and I actually didn't pick them up. I don't know why. I might go back and get them today before we leave. But there was like two random, like late 80s, early 90s on vinyl, like just interview records.
Oh, I used to get those when I was younger. Like me and my friends, we'd go to Camden in London,
yeah,
and we'd go to the market and just spend hours like going through all the bootleg stands, and there would always just be so many bootleg Metallica albums from different live shows. I remember I had one from like Soul and then one of like loads of acoustic, like, it was basically just a compilation of all the acoustic like radio performances,
yeah,
and different stuff on there, and then like another like interview discs as well. And yeah, I just kind of just absorb and just buy everything that I could.
Yeah, absolutely, man. You know, yeah. I mean, even just talking about it, I think I should probably go back before this record store closes and pick those things up, because they weren't that. It was literally, it was like $9 and $10. It wasn't crazy.
And no, you can't leave them there for that.
Yeah, and then and, you know, I know they're unofficial releases, but it's still, you know, cool little pieces to have.
Yeah, you can never. You just can't leave that stuff around. You just got to pick it up. I kick myself still about some of the things that I've kind of know that I've left behind or that I could have picked up at shows or yeah. at events. Like, I'm still like, I'm sitting here in my kind of little man cave, just got loads of Metallica stuff up, and I've got, when S&M came out on VHS, it had like a set of dog tags with it.
Yeah.
And so they're like hanging over a picture frame in here, and just so much kind of random little things. Got some big stuff like the action figure set with the, which does all the noises from One. And then kind of other little bits and pieces as well. But no, it's just so cool to grab as much as you can.
Wait, which action figure set is this that make noises from One?
So I've got I think it was a toy company called McFarlane.
Because I have those ones, kind of, but they don't make noise.
Have you not got the stage?
No, I don't have
the
stage.
Individual figures?
I have the individual figures. Me and Clint both do.
I got this one because I couldn't afford it when it came out at the time. So I bought it a few years later off eBay. So it's slightly broken, like the rigging around the outside doesn't perfectly link up. And I think one of the cymbals is a bit bent.
Right.
But yeah, no, the sound and the light still work.
Wow, so that's awesome.
It's really cool. Just whenever like people come around, you can just show me, like, press that button. And then
yeah.
It plays like the machine gun drumming bit from One.
And
the
lights so
kind
cool.
of flash on and off on the rigging.
That's so rad, man. So all the stuff you've kind of talked about with picking up old records and things like that, do you still have all that stuff?
I have, yeah. I had a bit of a purge of like all of our CDs and DVDs. We recycled them and sold them all. When I've moved house a couple of times, but the only things that I've kept have been the Metallica stuff. And I've got some other kind of cool one-off things and signed stuff from other bands.
Yeah.
But yeah, when we got rid of everything, but the Metallica CDs, I've still got them all, yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of a tough thing to get rid of, you know, when you're this passionate into a band. I mean, I've never gotten rid of any Metallica stuff, you know. Even a couple copies, you know, I have of vinyl. I don't know if you're hip to the website Discogs.
Yeah, a buddy of mine at work, he's a big vinyl collector, so he talks about Discogs a lot.
Yeah, it's great if you collect vinyl. It's a great way to catalog your vinyl. You know, if you have quite a few like myself and you're at a record store, and sometimes you forget, like, wait, do I have this? And it's a great way to look up real quick. And you can also like look up what record you're checking out to see if they're selling it for like a fair price.
Okay, so you can make sure you're not getting ripped off.
Yeah, it'll
see, there's so many different versions. I've gone down some of like the forum posts about the vinyls, and because you've, especially the early stuff when it was on so many different releases and so licensed to so many different companies.
Right.
There's like so many hundreds of copies of like Ride the Lightning or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. But the cool thing about there is you on Discogs on the app, you can actually scan in the exact barcode. And
oh, nice.
If there's no barcode on it, back before those, there was like these little letter and number codes. And if you type right. that in, it'll bring up the exact version that you're holding, which is nice. Because so like, you know, collecting stuff back in the day, like, you know, and I could say probably late 90s, early 2000s is when I was really getting into vinyl. So I was looking for all the Metallica stuff, and I was getting it, you know, back, my copy of Puppets was probably like $8, I think. And according to Discogs, it's worth like $55 now.
Nice.
It was just at a time where like vinyl hadn't had its huge resurgence yet, you know, and I just got
yeah,
into
it. You got it during the lull.
Yeah, exactly. So it's a really, if anyone listening, if you're into vinyl and you're not hip to Discogs, you can also catalog cassettes on there, DVDs, CDs, all that stuff. But I just use it for vinyl, and it's a great tool. It'll tell you the estimated value of your whole collection and stuff. It's pretty awesome.
It'd be cool to know some of that random stuff, because I went through a phase of just like getting loads of the old CD singles from eBay.
Yeah.
So, and especially like the foreign ones, like the Japanese ones and the Australian ones, because they used to have really cool B-sides.
Right.
So like you've got there's a really weird like techno-y remix version of For Whom the Bell Tolls. I think it was on the Spawn soundtrack that I didn't hear until that. There's a remix of Hero of the Day that Moby did.
Yeah, I remember
that.
There's
on another one of the Jeff, and like the elevator version of Nothing Else Matters. Like the first time I heard that, I think that was like a B-side on a Japanese Sabbath True single.
That's so a great
really
version
cool way of
by
finding
the way.
Out those those weird stuff. Yeah, I had that at my wedding.
No way.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
But I knew I had to get some Metallica in there somewhere. So how can you keep it classy, but still with Metallica? So I was like, oh, it's got to be the elevator version.
You're like, honey, trust me. Like, it'll be fine. We're not going to play Damage Incorporated when we're on our first dance.
Exactly. Yeah, I wasn't going to scare my nan.
Yeah, exactly. Well, is your wife down with Metallica, or is she kind of like, meh, that's cool?
She kind of, I don't think she'd ever heard of them until we met, but no, she embraced it. She's been to 3 shows. She actually came to Barcelona at the weekend with me as well.
Oh, cool, man.
So she came to Donington when we were in the Snake Pit for the shows where they played the whole Black Album.
Yeah.
And then she came up to me to Glasgow to one of the arena shows a couple of years ago.
Oh, that's so cool.
And then she came this weekend. So yeah, she could hold her own in a Metallica conversation.
That's awesome, man. Well, my wife's been to one show. I think she came with me only because it was my birthday. But other than that, she's not too down with Metallica. I mean, I could put on the Unforgiven or Nothing Else Matters, Fade to Black maybe, and she'd be fine. But she's not ever going to actively go to my record collection and be like, let's listen to Injustice for All. Not really her cup of tea. But so this Barcelona show, was this your, if my math is correct, your 5th show on the Worldwide Tour?
Fifth. 2 in London. 1 in Glasgow, 1 in Charlotte, and then this one.
Awesome, man. That's so cool. Anyone that's been knows this, but it's such a great tour, arena or stadium. You know, it's so cool to see these guys we've known and loved for so long in their 50s just wearing it out and putting on such a good show every time.
Oh, the show is amazing. Like the arena tour was so cool. Like one of the reasons I wanted to take my wife, because she's a drama teacher and kind of loves theater. And I knew that just like the spectacle and the staging of everything would blow her away.
Yeah, for
but
sure.
Then, yeah, the stadium one now is kind of just, obviously there's some tricks and things they can't do, but everything else, it's on such a massive scale. It's just, you just can't fail to be impressed.
Yeah, it's gigantic. I mean, I'm sure over there too. I mean, some of the stadiums they're playing are bigger than stadiums they played in the US. That setup is so cool. I mean, I saw that one twice. You know, those gigantic screens, even if you're in the back, I mean, the band looks like, you know, the size of ants through your eyes, but it is cool to have those huge screens and the production can get a lot bigger and they can do more with pyro outdoors and stuff. It's a fantastic show.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I think like, obviously we were quite close to the front, but I can imagine that even when you walked into the stadium from the very back, you kind of like the scale with the giant M and the A,
yep,
and those screens. I bet even if you were in the nosebleeds, it would have still been a kind of a quite, you'd still have felt connected to it. You know exactly what's going on.
Yeah, man. I remember the first one I saw was in Philadelphia. I had a day off from tour and a bunch of us went. And when we kind of walked into the stadium, we kind of came in through the backside, like way out by front of house. But I even remember just walking in there and just like seeing the whole setup, just going, oh my God. Like, and I hadn't seen Metallica in like 8 years at that point. So I was pumped.
That's amazing. No, I hadn't seen them in a stadium like of their own. I've seen them at festivals, but I don't think I've seen them at a stadium for about 12 years. They played Wembley, I think it was 2007.
Right.
And that was kind of on quite a different kind of stage. It was one that kind of had the ramps at the back. They had a couple of screens, but they weren't that big. So this was definitely kind of they're all out. You can see now they've got kind of technologies there, they've got the money, they can just put on the best show possible.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and they're, you know, most of these are going to sell out, and you know, everyone's going to be coming to these shows. I mean, I don't think when they did, you know, Saint Anger to Death Magnetic, I don't think I could have imagined a record this good and a tour this top notch. You know, it would be my hope, but now that it's all kind of come to be, and Hardwired is such a great record, and this album cycle has been incredible for them, you know, pushing 3 years now, it's just hard to believe that it all happened.
No, and it's amazing. You can see, obviously, when we talk about the set list, but they're playing a lot of new stuff. But at the same time, it's not a greatest hit sets either. They're not having to just rely on kind of the most popular radio singles. They've got kind of the confidence to just kind of, yeah, really do what they want, but also know that that's going to keep everybody happy.
Right, exactly. Well, I mean, man, if you want to jump into the set list, we can, because, you know, the U.S. set list, you know, it was fairly monotonous with the exception of about 4 rotating slots. They're kind of surprising everybody with this. I mean, there's multiple rotating slots. I mean, they're throwing in some deep cuts. It's insane. I mean, I remember the first night where were they? In Lisbon.
I think the first one was in Lisbon.
Yeah. And I remember, you know, our friend Chris Yurgis was like texting me and Clint, he was on, wow. He was on setlist.fm, like following along as people were submitting what songs they were playing. And I was like in whatever city, just looking at my phone, just going, oh my God, I can't believe they're playing this. What? You know, it's so unbelievable. Yeah. So, well, keep.
I spent the whole kind of time beforehand prepping my wife, saying, well, obviously they'll start with Hardwired, but then they'll go into Atlas, then probably Seek. Then we kind of don't know what they'll do fourth. And then on that, I think it was last Wednesday, when they were playing Lisbon, and I saw Hardwired into Disposable Heroes, I was like, what the hell?
Yeah.
That's going to get me so excited, because you just really, normally when you go to a show, you've got a reasonable idea of what they're going to play, but you genuinely didn't.
No, I mean, I think, you know, this set list and what they're doing with it was a complete shock to me, and I'm sure most Metallica fans, you know, people were even, just, you know, we read through the comments on Instagram and stuff, people were just like, what is happening? let's kind of jump into the set list, man. Give us the rundown, you know, in any notable moments. Obviously in these ones there's a bunch.
There's plenty.
You know, starting with Hardwired is normal. I mean, that's what was expected, followed by Atlas Rise, but in this case, no, it's like they do Hardwired into Memory Remains.
Straight into Memory Remains, which is always kind of it's always an awesome live one, especially in the stadiums with the sing along parts. So even maybe if people weren't quite on board with the new album, and maybe Hardwired wasn't, if they've been living under a rock for 3 years, weren't as au fait with that, then they're going straight into Memory was really cool. You had kind of the sing along bit, and then I don't know if you've heard it yet, but they then come normally when they do the sing along bit. Kind of Lars will keep time a bit with the cymbal
right.
And do a little bit of conducting, and then they'll all go change guitars and get ready for the next song. But they kind of brought it back in and have this like really cool, quite heavy breakdown bit at the end. It kind of reminds me of what the Foo Fighters do sometimes with kind of some of their songs, where they kind of add this extra outro onto it. So that was awesome.
Oh, that's really cool. Yeah, I haven't actually watched a live video of that one. I was too focused on a couple of other songs.
I haven't put one out yet, but no, definitely. As soon as they put one out of Memory, yeah, that last kind of another like 30, 45 seconds, It's really cool. It must be something they've kind of played around with in the tuning room, and no, it works really well. It's kind of bring the song back.
That's so cool, man. I mean, and you know, you're talking about the sing along part. I mean, when we saw Memory Remains in Birmingham, I mean, it's such a perfect crowd sing back to the band moment, and especially in a stadium, I can't imagine everyone singing.
Yeah, they got like 60. I don't know how many people were there on Sunday. It's a pretty big stadium, probably 60,000-65,000.
Jeez.
And yeah, there wasn't anybody around me who wasn't singing in that part. So it must be really cool for the band as well.
Yeah, man. And you guys are pretty close.
Yeah, so we were, obviously with Black Ticket, you get Golden Circle, which is, I don't know if you kind of have that over in the States, but you basically have like, obviously you've got the snake pit, and then they barrier off basically a line across the whole stadium standing area, maybe about 30 meters back from the stage.
Okay.
And then only people with Golden Circle access get to go in that part.
Wow.
So it's really nice. Obviously you're guaranteed a really good view, and also you can kind of go in and out. So it's a little bit easier to go to get beers and stuff.
Oh,
and
that's
go back
cool.
In. And even if you are kind of, even if you're late there, you're still going to have a really good view.
Yeah, totally. That's crazy, man. I didn't realize they were doing that and having a special section just for Black Ticket holders. That's so awesome.
It's not just for Black Ticket. You can also buy, because I got my wife a ticket in there in the Golden Circle. So it's just, I think it's like, you can look at it two ways. Is there's the safety. I think one part of it is safety, because it kind of creates a natural break. You haven't got the entire crowd all together. But also on the more cynical side, you can also just charge another €40 for the tickets in that bit.
Right, totally. Man, that's really...
It keeps the accountants happy.
Yeah, exactly. That's cool, man. Well, I'm stoked you guys are so close with those Black Tickets, man. That's awesome. So third slot, they start now doing Ride the Lightning, which is amazing.
Yeah.
I know it's
so cool. Like, one of my favorite songs, and as soon as you go into that opening riff, they got really cool like effects on the big screen. They're videoing the band, but they've obviously got a filter on it. And then we've got the, like lightning effects around them. They all look like superheroes, and this looks so cool.
That's awesome.
It was just the right amount of rock star windy. So Kirk was really nervous at that time, and he's got his hair kind of blowing back.
Oh yeah,
absolutely shredding
hair. Well, James
it looked $1 million.
James's hair is starting to grow out, man. I'm sure his hair was flowing in the wind a little bit.
It is. Yeah, he was looking good, but just Kirk was kind of right in front of us and kind of featured loads on the screen.
Right.
He looked like half Thor, half Kirk Hammett. So he'd have loved it. I bet he's from his comic book love. I bet he's got a few say in that.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I've seen him post a couple of things where, I mean, it might just be in Photoshop stuff where he looks like, you know, there's like lightning coming out of his hands and stuff. And it's pretty cool. But, man, so slot four was pretty rad. The thing, they start playing The Thing That Should Not Be, and on their set list, they always title it Thingy. But this one's cool. It's the first time they played on the entire tour, and it's the first performance since March 2nd, 2013.
Yeah, so we kind of, obviously we didn't know what was coming, and I saw James across the stage, and he was getting handed a guitar that I didn't really recognize. I think maybe it was like one of the baritone ones, so I was like, so it's going to be something heavy.
Yeah.
So I didn't know if maybe it'd be like something off St. Anger, maybe. And then obviously you go straight into that riff. And I think there's quite a few people around me who weren't quite, they kind of took them a while to figure out what it was. But I kind of just said straight to my wife, oh my God, they never play this. This is really, really cool.
That's so awesome.
And I look back, I'm really geeky. I've got like a list of all the shows I've been to and I watched which songs were played. And this is my 13th show overall.
Okay.
And it was only the second time that they've ever played Thing That Should Not Be.
Wow, that's crazy, man. I mean, it's been, you know, a little over six years since they played it, and what a cool thing to be able to go to a show in Barcelona and see them debut it on the tour.
Yeah, and it's great, and like, James was fantastic. The vocals are amazing, and when he's like doing like the evil laughs, yeah, he put you and Clint to shame.
Yeah, I'm sure he does. I mean, our reverb sounds pretty cool, but
yeah, I think he'd be asking how you get those effects, maybe. You can talk to Big Mick.
Yeah, I'll give him some suggestions. Yeah, make some a little more reverb on James's maniacal laughter. Well, yeah, what a treat to see that song, man. It's so cool. I've never seen it live. Hopefully one day I will be able to. And then we're kind
of... lots of theories that maybe they're going to be... they're kind of warming it up for S&M2, possibly.
Well, yeah, I mean, that would be amazing. That seems to be a common conspiracy theory in the Metallica world.
Yeah, it's very popular in the boards. But I like that. I'll buy into that for the moment. You can dream. I think it'd be really cool with an orchestra.
I will
too.
There's
a lot of potential there.
Well, I mean, think about it. I mean, when they announced it, it's like, hey, we're going to be playing a lot of Michael Kamen's arrangements. However, they're going to be also playing stuff that came out post S&M, like Hardwired stuff, Saint Anger stuff. Now there's a Saint Anger slot in the set. You know, Lords of Summer. So who knows, man? I mean, and maybe the guy that's conducting will write a couple new arrangements too, because they didn't specifically say that they were going to play everything that Michael Kamen did, and that's it. You know, they said they're going to play his stuff and other. So we'll see. That's going to be an insane weekend of following along online. I'm actually going to be in Spain when that's happening.
Oh, cool!
Have you ever been down to the Canary Islands?
I have. Yeah, yeah. Which one are you going to?
We're going to Lanzarote.
Ah, Lanzarote. Yeah, yeah, that's quite nice. I've never been to that one. I've been to like Tenerife, Canaria, Mallorca, Menorca. But no, they're all nice, kind of guaranteed sunshine, nice beaches, nice scenery.
And I will tell you this too. I'm actually going to be in London for 2 nights on that same trip.
Ah, cool. Oh, you'll have to have to put that out. I'm sure there's a few of us around who will be happy to buy you a beer.
Well, so it's going to be me and my wife and another friend. And yeah, the 2 nights are going to be in London. We got some friends that live there, and then one of the 2 nights we'll be going out to some pub. So I'll keep you posted.
Ah, that'd be cool. That'd be awesome.
You know, it's one of my favorite ones there. I'm sure there's plenty of other ones I've never been to that might blow it away. But have you ever hung out at Slim Jim's?
No.
It's like a cool rock and roll bar. I can't remember the neighborhood that it's in, but it's called Slim Jim's Liquor Store, but it's a bar.
Cool.
It's really cool. And I'm pretty sure it's owned by Slim Jim from the Stray Cats, but it's just a really cool rock and roll bar.
Ah, oh, nice. There's so many of them around London. There's a really great one called the Crow's Nest, which is just off of Leicester Square.
Off
of Charing Cross Road. And there's a place called Garlic and Shots, which pretty much just plays like Iron Maiden and Metallica 24/7.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, you're never short of good options.
Totally. All right, so moving on, we got... One of course, the staple the whole tour. You got the Unforgiven.
Yeah, it was probably one of my favorite songs off the Black Album. And as soon as you hear that tape, and you can see the guy setting up the acoustic on the stand, so you know what's coming. And yeah, it's absolutely nailed it. Kirk absolutely destroyed the solo just in front of us. Kind of, we were just to the right of the snake pit, kind of looking at the stage.
Yeah,
kind of came out on the ramp down that way. And no, it just sounded so good. The sound in general, because that's the only thing I ever worry about kind of is big shows, is a bit windy, how's the sound going to be? But the sound was absolutely amazing.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, stadium shows are tough. You know, sometimes it gets windy. I mean, when sound travels, the wind can actually push it, you know, in different directions.
There's only so much that they can do. Back in the stadium was quite steep sides, so that probably protected it a little bit, and it wasn't an overly windy day. Even though the stadium's up on a top of a massive hill, you're kind of overlooking the whole of Barcelona when you're walking up there.
Oh, that's
but they got really lucky with the weather.
That's cool, man. That's that's awesome. I'd love to see Metallica
overseas. Today, I've seen lots of pictures today because they're playing in Milan right now,
right?
And it's just been torrential rain all day.
Oh,
I've seen pictures
sucks.
Of people like in the snake pit, just in ponchos. So it's probably been a slightly less pleasurable experience.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the risk when you go to a stadium show. Unless there's lightning, it's rain or shine.
Yeah, no, they're lucky; they won't get too much lightning. But yeah, I think they'll have had a very wet day today.
Yeah, totally. So the cool thing next is that, you know, they debuted this towards the end of the U.S. leg of the tour, but they're doing Here Comes Revenge over there, which is awesome.
Yeah, no, brilliant song. So great as well, because it's a song that I've been singing for the first time. Never seen that live before.
Yeah.
And I was lucky. I was in London for the debut of Spit Out the Bone. I think it's the first time I've ever been to a show where I've had a complete live debut.
Oh,
and I
had
to get one of the first playings in Europe. It was really cool. I think it's a fantastic song.
Oh, yeah,
for sure. And
then
to go from that into Moth as well, kind of two of the highlights from Hardwired.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, when I first saw that they cut Atlas Rise, I was like, surely they won't do that to Moth and the Flame too. But they did not.
No, I mean, there's too much production value in Moth as well.
When I saw a couple of video clips
the dancing flames. I'm sure they had that on the US tour as well. That's kind of the first time that the pyro really kicked in.
Right. Yeah. I saw that they brought that, the dancing flame back. So we got to see that on a couple of the stadium shows over here. Like we mentioned before, I mean, they can do so much more pyro, you know, overseas, or I'm sorry, not overseas, but in stadiums, which is just amazing.
Yeah, that's absolutely insane. And again, obviously you talked to the pyro guy on the one of the past episodes, which was super interesting. And yeah, they just go all out. There's just no expense spared. You're getting a Metallica show, you're getting the music, but they're not just kind of letting that stand on its own. They're really putting in that extra effort, which I think is great for those people who are maybe a couple of hundred meters away, but at the back of the stadium,
right.
You might not be able to pick out James's facial expressions, but you can see the flames and it's going to really add something.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and I think that's, you know, the whole point in having that kind of huge production, like oversized screens and everything, is that, like, you want everyone in that entire stadium to be able to see something up close at a certain point.
Yeah, you feel like you're getting value for money, and you're part of the experience.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so moving on here, we have all this kind of I don't mean this in a bad way. When I'm like, okay, Sad But True, Fade to Black, I'm kind of like, let's just get to the ones that are the surprises.
The standout ones.
But no, it is cool. So they, you know, Sad But True and Fade to Black. I remember at the first show they crossed off Fade to Black and did Sanitarium instead.
So they had the intro tape. Obviously, the Sabbath Troop is amazing.
Of course, yeah.
Not discount that. Really cool. And like, cool to have it earlier in the set, because normally it kind of, on the arena tour, it kind of signaled the beginning of the end.
Right.
And also the beginning of kind of the predictability. You kind of knew after Sad But True what you were going to get.
Yep.
Whereas I liked having it kind of earlier on. That was cool. And then Fate of Black is hands down my favorite Metallica song. So anytime that's included, I'm always absolutely psyched. And again, absolutely nailed it. And that the awesome outro with all the crowd singing along
is
an absolute treat.
Yeah, and then it looks like the Robin Kirk did Man Unkind, Orion, and El Muerto Vivo.
Yeah, no, it was really weird. Like, obviously, you know they're going to play something. That's the benefit of going to these foreign shows, because I knew they were going to play something that I had probably never heard of.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, it was awesome with Rob, obviously, with his Hispanic roots. So he was obviously really having a great time.
Yeah.
Kirk played this cool kind of black acoustic guitar. And Rob's voice was great. My wife actually said to me, I was like, wow, Rob's got a really good voice. He was loving singing in Spanish. And then, he did like the bass solo, kind of the intro-y stuff to Man Unkind, and then a bit of Orion.
Yeah, sometimes the doodles can be a little weird and stuff, but they seem to have kind of dialed it in, especially when they kind of play something that's kind of for that city or country or state or whatever. So, we had fun with it. You know, in Nashville, I think they started playing part of Dyer's Eve, and it was awesome.
Yeah, I think kind of the Spanish crowd really, really dug it. Like, there were lots of people singing along, so yeah. They'd obviously made a really good choice. And it's also just really nice. It kind of shows that they're taking a bit of time and effort, because they've got to sit around and learn those things. They don't have to do that.
Right,
yeah. Just kind of chug out some Metallica stuff without any effort.
Exactly.
So I think it's really nice.
So moving on to one of the most, it's now the most exciting slots of the set. We saw it, you know, at the Lisbon show. They did Frantic, and then they did St. Anger at the next show. But so this looks like they're going to rotate those back and forth, I'm assuming, at this point.
Yeah, it'd be interesting if they do expand any more than that. But I was really happy to have Frantic. And yeah, it was kind of what everybody wanted. It was Frantic, but it was St. Anger stuff, but with guitar solos. So
right.
Kirk added loads of extra bits in. That'd be really cool to see if they put out some of the Met on Tour videos. You did have full-on Cookie Monster vocals as well, which I was just laughing. And I was doubly laughing as well, because every time Kirk did his vocals, he would also knock over the mic stand. So some poor tech had to run on stage and put the mic stand back up again. And then in the next chorus, he'd knock it over again. And then the poor guy would have to run out again.
Right.
So, yeah, I it was an absolute blast. I really enjoyed it.
Kirk seems to kind of like to mess with people. Like when they do the drone thing on the arena tour, like every once in a while, he would like knock one down with his guitar.
Yeah, he's just got that rebellious streak. He's still angry about having to go to Catholic school and being mistreated by all the nuns
yeah.
and hiding his comic books. So,
I think
he still
right.
just wants to just to be a naughty kid.
So how was the crowd when they started Frantic? Were people just like losing it, or like were they excited?
It was kind of probably a mix. There were some people who I think did not have a clue what was going on and probably have not listened to St. Anger in about the last 15 years. But
right.
then there are lots of other people I think who appreciated just kind of something different, something they haven't played for a very long time. And also it just sounded so cool. It was just brilliant. They kind of added all the bits in that you wished had probably been there on the record.
Right, yeah. No, it's cool that they're making it a little bit different from the actual album, you know, with the whole solos thing. And obviously Lars's snare doesn't sound like St. Anger live, you know.
Exactly, no trash can snare, yep.
Yeah,
so
totally.
Whenever I'm watching the shows, I always think about, like, which of these songs, if I get the chance, which songs am I going to buy to keep? I'm not going to buy the whole show, every show.
Right.
And Frantic for sure, because it's a really, really cool version.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. So moving on, so this might also or might be what you talked about earlier about, you know, Sabbath True being kind of the beginning and the end of the set list, but now we get into One, and this is where we get in, and this is crazy, they do One into Puppets, like where Puppets has always been the song of this whole tour that ends the main part of the set.
Yeah.
So it's crazy One. Sorry, go ahead.
That's cool. No, yeah, because obviously you're hitting with a no pun intended, but a 1-2 punch of probably two of the biggest songs. You've got the amazing intro to One, which is definitely 100 times better in a stadium because they can do so much more with the lasers and with the flash pots. And I've actually seen it in a stadium for a very long time, if at all. So even at the end, I was noticing that all the skulls, when they change, when the soldiers go from kind of faces to skulls, that they're all the old pus head skulls.
Yeah.
You've got like the pirate, there was the damage ink one as well.
It's pretty
like
awesome.
Little bits
yeah.
like that for the really geeky people who are paying super close attention, really kind of
yeah.
paying off.
I remember seeing that when I first saw the stadium tour, and I was just like, wait a second, they're skulls now, and then like the old pus head artwork. That's so cool.
Yeah, just another level of stuff they don't have to do. They could just end marching. They could just end turning into skulls, but then just kind of going that extra mile as well to really
yeah.
give it back for the people who are paying attention. And then kind of the changeover from Puppets into the kind of the next little set. I thought they'd be a bit longer, but it was really quick and really snappy.
Yeah. Well, and this whole, you know, 1-2 punch of Two Ride Lightning songs on the last tour was way earlier in the set. You know, Bells into Creeping Death. So it's crazy to see it kind of closing out the first set with like mostly old school stuff.
Yeah, well, you've got that because after Puppets is when the drum kit comes up at the front of the Snake Pit.
Okay, so that was my question. These are the little things that I haven't looked up yet because it's more fun to actually hear it from somebody who went to the show.
Yeah,
you know, on the first stadium tour, they only did that for Seek and Destroy.
Okay, I didn't know that. I didn't follow the American stadium tour as closely.
Yeah, it was just one
Puppets,
song.
You got, and I, because I knew that they kind of moved to the front, but I didn't realize. And it was like a snap of the fingers, and a trapdoor opens, and then boom, there's a drum kit.
Yeah.
And then they're all around it.
Yeah, man.
And it was funny. I like the guy said who was talking about the Lisbon show. I wondered how close they would stay, or whether they would kind of wander back towards the main stage. And because we were so close to that bit, I was really happy they did pretty much just stay around the drum kit, which did mean that Rob couldn't do his crab walk or his spinning bit.
Right,
but
exactly.
It just meant you got to see them kind of really interacting with each other and then with us in the crowd so close by for those that set of three songs. And so Bell's absolutely amazing. Creeping Death, I took that moment to kind of look around the stadium during the Die chant as well. And that looks so cool.
Yeah, that's cool, man. I mean, just to have three songs at that position is pretty awesome too. So it gives people, you know, that happen to be at the very end of that big catwalk, you know, a chance to see not one song but three songs a little, you know, more up close.
Yeah, and so I go back and forth as like where, obviously with Bell's Creep and then into Seek and Destroy, I go back and forth with where I prefer Seek. I think I kind of grew up always knowing that it was that the last song. And lots of the early shows I saw, it was kind of played towards the end. I liked it when they threw it into the arena tour early, but I think this is a great position for it, kind of at the end of the main set.
Right,
and
yeah.
And you know you've still got that encore to come.
Yeah, exactly. That, I mean, like I said before, I'm on the stadium tour, that they were ending the main set with Seek and Destroy. And then going to the encore, were you hoping for something other than Lords of Summer, or were you stoked on this?
No, I was really keen to see that because I love it as a song. I loved it from when it first came out. I've actually seen them play it live before because I saw them on the By Request tour back in 2014. I think just after it had after they'd written it. So I think it's a great song. The only downside I would say is I don't think it's that well known by the majority of fans. So there was just a little bit of a lull. A little bit of the energy was lost. But no, I'd tell you that. Obviously, across the nine shows I see, I'd like it if there was some other stuff thrown in there, some Blackened, some Damaging, some Battery. But no, I'll take Lords of Summer as a live rarity. Anyway.
Yeah, no, it's a great tune. I mean, when they first debuted it live a couple of years back, I was just like, oh my God, because it's the first thing we heard that could be a new Metallica record. And turns out it wasn't even on the record. It was, you know, one of the bonus disc, you know, songs.
Yeah.
But I'm glad they re-recorded it with Greg Fildeman. And that recording sounds great on the deluxe edition.
No, it's fantastic. Yeah. And it's a track I go back to again and again. And yeah, hopefully kind of as they play it live more, people will kind of get a bit more on board and a bit more into it. I'll always be happy to hear it.
Absolutely, man. So, I mean, the last two are the usuals that have been in this entire tour, but I mean, this is pretty much the only part of the set that they didn't change. You know, I mean, they've gone from Bells to Creeping Death before, but like these two, you can't really, at this point in their career, I guess, you can't really put them anywhere else, but it is interesting to look at the whole set list that is all kind of different. And then this is still the same, but you got to end it with, you know, at least Sandman.
Yeah. And you can tell like how much everybody is into it. Like nothing else matters. It's a fantastic song.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Always love it. I love when James would used to do the intro a little bit, but I like how he's just super. I don't know. It's a good way for him vocally also to kind of come down at the end of the set before you do Sandman. But even when we were doing our Mexico City show last week and watching that one, I love that version too because he just sits down the whole time. And it's tough to do in a stadium. Like, you know, if he sat down, I think people would feel kind of gypped. But I still love that song.
Yeah, no, it's fantastic. I obviously grew up on the Cutting Stunts version where he's kind of sat down the whole time and then the brilliant stool kicking away.
Yeah.
But I like the intro that Kirk does now. Although there was definitely a bit of a mess up on this one with the effects just as James went into his solo.
Oh yeah.
Because it wasn't the right guitar sound. And he pulled I thought he was going to pull a really grumpy face, but he kind of laughed it off, kind of played through the solo. But
oh wow, was it like a cleaner tone or something?
I'm trying to remember the exact problem now, but it wasn't kind of the tone that he was expecting.
Right.
So somebody, I don't know, maybe having the new guitar. I'm assuming he's got a different guitar tech at the moment. While Chad's recovering.
Chad's still there.
Is he still there? Okay.
Yeah, he's still there. I'm not sure if he's still running out guitars to him right now because of his shoulder got dislocated and they popped it back into place. There's nothing permanent, nothing broken or anything. So he might be running out the guitars still, but I know he's still there doing at least the very minimum, doing all his pedal changes.
Right. Someone hit something wrong there.
Yeah, someone walked by and tripped
over
it.
It was still cool. It wasn't like they kind of cut the power to it or muted it or anything like that. So right. He just kind of laughed it off.
That's cool.
And then it's kind of little things from nothing into Sandman is where you kind of notice kind of what pros they are. Because he plays with his White Fang plectrums the whole time.
Yeah.
And then you see him kind of just, and this is again because I've seen so many shows and you're kind of watching little things. It's just at the end of that, as you've got like the feedback on the end of that solo, that's when he goes over to a stand and he picks up the city pick.
Yeah.
And then he's got it all ready by the camera. And I absolutely love that moment. Even you know it's coming, and he does it at every show.
Oh, people love that stuff.
Such,
yeah.
Gets such a great pop from everybody else.
Absolutely. You see the name of your city
and
there.
Going into that riff.
Oh, it's so good. I mean, and man, I'll say this. I you know, as much as I think I prefer the arena shows, I think Enter Sandman in the stadium is better.
Yeah, because you kind of obviously the limitation, like the little fireworks they had in the arena are cool with that, but the fireworks for Sandman in the stadium are insane.
Oh, it's out of control. I mean, I don't know if they're doing it over there, but even at the very end of the song, it's like a full-on fireworks show happening above the stadium.
No, for sure, because I knew that there were like some fireworks at the end, and I was expecting like, oh, okay, song finishes, 30 seconds of fireworks. But they were going off for a good like 3-4 minutes.
Yeah, totally, man. It's so cool. Well, man, God, this set list is so cool. I mean, I'm anxious to see. I mean, the set list is probably coming in as we speak for this show tonight.
before we got on the phone, I did check in. I'm trying to remember. I'll get things wrong if I try and guess that, but there was definitely, I think it was like Hardwired, Memory Ride, God That Failed, and then Unforgiven, Revenge, Moth. So it'll be interesting to see what they came out with after that while we've been talking.
Well, it looks like, let's see, the show might be over.
It's about 11 p- coming up to 11 p.m. over there, so maybe.
I just pulled it up on setlist.fm, and oh my gosh, there's no way. Okay, this has got to be a joke.
Yeah, people always just put Dire's Eve on there.
No,
so
okay,
don't,
so
don't fall for that.
I got chills for a second because I looked down, and under the encore, it said Fixer, the house that Jack built, and Dirty Window, which we obviously know is not true.
Some good trolling there.
But no, there's some good ones in this in the first part of this one. So someone out there is going to be reviewing this show too. So we won't give it up. Other than Fixer.
No. I look forward to hearing that.
Well, dude, Tom, thank you so much for doing this, man.
Oh, no problem. No, it's been great fun. I'm looking forward to hopefully catching up with you guys after another couple of shows later on in the year.
Yeah, absolutely, man. And then I'll be over in your neck of the woods at the end of August, but I'll reach out to you when it gets closer and let you know exact dates and let you know if there's a night we all go out and come out and meet up.
Well, if we can get a little London, New Jersey get together, then that'd be great.
Absolutely. All right, Tom. Well, dude, thanks again, and stay in touch, and can't wait to hear about your future shows you're going to.
Will do. Cheers. Thanks so much, Ethan.
All right, buddy.
Bye.
See ya.
Hey, it's Clint from Metal Up Your Podcast, and we hope you're enjoying the Metal Tales from the Road series. If you've been keeping up with us, then you already know that we've covered every stop on the 2018-2019 North American Arena Tour, and we look forward to catching up with all of our European friends later this year on the Stadium Tour overseas. And there's more! After the Stadium Tour, we are continuing the Metal Tales series for any Metallica show in the past. Maybe you saw one of the Orion Festivals. Maybe you were at the Channel in 1984 and Cliff Burton bought you a beer. Maybe you were at one of the 30th anniversary shows, or you just saw a regular-ass show in North Dakota somewhere. We want to hear from you. Since Ethan and I started Metal Up Your Podcast, we've wanted to find a way for listeners to call in and share their stories. Well, this is it. To make yourself eligible for a future or past Metal Tales episode, please consider joining us on Patreon. For $5 a month, you not only get to come on the show as a guest, you also get both of our Cover Our World Blackened EPs, monthly giveaways like deluxe box sets, rare vinyl, posters, and other goodies. You get early access to our YouTube videos, and we also let you ask our guests like Ray Burton, Michael Wagner, Hailstorm, members of Slipknot, your very own questions. For what essentially amounts to 2 cups of coffee a month, you can ensure that Metal Up Your Podcast continues to grow in quality and content. For any of you on the ride with us, we love you, we thank you, peace and adios. Mickey.